Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
We're late for a very important date, but we're here.
Better late than never.
I'm there. That's blame me this week.
We always blame you. So.
I know.
Kind of. Yeah.
And accurately blame you this time.
For a reason. There's actually a reason to blame you.
Instead of our normal, just like, hey, it's Sean's fault.
Yep. You know what they say in music? If you don't know what it is, it's jazz. So if it's somebody's fault, it's Sean.
There you go.
Yeah. Did you know that, Sean? Did you know that about jazz?
I did know that.
Yeah.
Can't make it out. It's jazz. Exactly.
Exactly. There's no rules. So good for that. We don't like rules, do we?
No, I don't think so. Not really.
No stinking rules.
No stinking rules. Well, talking about rules, we broke a rule last time. We had a guest. I don't know if it was a rule, but it was definitely a
streak, a standard.
Yes. And exciting to finally have a really cool guest, by the way. So Diana, thank you for bringing Janelle on. That was really cool.
Yeah, it was great to have her.
Yeah, and I think we can kind of tease that we're going to have another YC's person coming on in October. We don't know which week is going to be, but for sure, Lynn Dom is going to join us, and that's going to be fun.
She is awesome. So yeah, that'll be a lot of fun.
Cool. You know what, Sean?
What
day was 2 days ago? You actually the one that reminded me about the change of the season, right?
It is stumble season.
Stumble.
Oh, no. Fall season. Sorry. Stumble and then fall.
Ah, stumble. Okay.
Stumble season. Fall season.
We have solstice-ed. Past the solstice.
We've crossed something. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know why I wanted to mention this? Because this morning when I was looking at what's coming up, and really I promise we are inviting guests, so it's not just the three of us. I was thinking that the last episode of October is going to be on the 28th, and it's exactly 3 days before one of my favorite day of the year, which is Halloween. And I was thinking maybe we do an Halloween theme episode.
Okay. I like that.
Yeah.
Do you like Halloween, Sean?
Boo.
You don't like Halloween?
Is it boo?
Are you being scared?
It's all in the intonation, right? Boo.
Yeah.
Boo or boo.
So do we like it, Halloween?
I like it, yeah.
You get scared? Do you get spooked easily?
I just use it as an excuse to dress up my dogs in ridiculous costumes. Like this one, actually, the avatar here is Nora. You can't really see it, but she's got a flapper dress on because this was Halloween from a few years ago. So she's got a little flapper dress with red fringe and a pearl necklace. So she was going to go like dance in a fountain with Zelda Fitzgerald.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you think they love that, or they just think like, why you make me do this?
So I've had, unfortunately, dogs don't live long enough. So I have had more dogs. I would like to have had just, you know, a couple of dogs my whole life, but you know, as you know, they don't live long enough. And there's a cycle that happens, which is the first couple of years that I have a dog, they don't love dressing up, but they realize that until a good photo is taken, that it's usually going to keep going on. And then there's always a lot of treats and love and pats and everything at the end. So, early on, they're kind of like, why are we doing this? And then they hit this like zone. They cross the Rubicon, and they know that if they just pose really quickly, that I'll take the picture, and then they get the treats. So they become like perfect models. and they're just like, they'll know it'll last like 5 minutes, and then they can take the stupid costumes off, and they get all the treats and pats that they want. So I don't think they love it, but they're used to it.
They don't have an option. That sounds like it. You're going to have to like it.
Well, I mean, they do. We did have one dog that for a while she decided she didn't want to dress up. And then she started photo bombing because she saw the other dogs dressing up. So then she got back into it. And the cats they've just put their paws down and said, nope, we are not going to do this. We're not going to participate. So we never force, but we do gently guide.
love it.
You don't force, you just withhold food.
Well, they're just treats. They don't get their actual dinners or breakfast. It's just extra treats.
The morale will, or how does that saying go?
They're not like, we don't starve them. They don't, but feeding nothing like that.
The morale improves. And that's a bad joke. All right, so here we are. This is through the tech vine for folks who are wondering what the heck it is we're rambling on about. And none of that has anything to do with tech and the goodness in the tech that we find in the stories that we uncover during the week. And this is a show where we get to rap about whatever we want. We bring a topic and have some fun with it. And hopefully it's in the spirit of making things better for society, that there's always the other side of the coin. Marco usually brings that one. That
other perspective. I'm the Halloween person to bring the dark side.
The one that brings the boo. Oh, no, I did that this week. But for those that are listening, that's what it's about. And we always have a guest.
We hear them every time. Can't see them or hear them.
I'm doing the air quotes or sarcasm / sarcasm, something like that. But
there you go.
It was a lot of fun last time. And what I really loved about it is like when she said, okay, I'll join you guys. What's the plan? And we're like, well, there is no plan. That's the plan. And that's what I really like about all of this. And one thing that I would really like, and I'm going to just take the opportunity here, is first of all, if some of you listening in the tech world and not even in the tech world, and you would like to make a suggestion about it, news that we haven't seen, because of course we can't see everything. I mean, we get a lot of emails, we talk to a lot of people, but of course, we can't know about everything happening in the tech world. So, just to drop a note on social media, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, or, just contact us and tell us, hey, this is a cool news, or this is seems cool, but it's maybe horrible, something that Marco want to rip on it. just let us know, because I think we have a path. I think we found our own groove, and I'm gonna try to do the psychologist here. So Diana, you always have to, you like the animals. So if you find the news about the animals, that's your thing. And I think Sean is about music and food, of course. I can't forget that. And
musical food.
And I may be about
the food
space.
Of love.
Yeah, we mix it all together. We make a kind of a salad. Kind of, maybe it's that Mediterranean watermelon salad, Diana, that we were talking before we clicked the record.
Yeah.
So you owe me a recipe. I can't wait to do that. Well, shall we get going? So maybe for once we don't go rambling for an entire hour. So we can get going with the first news, tech news that got your attention. And of course, as usual, Diana, that's you.
All right. So I got to say, I was surprised that this caught my attention because years ago, I was working on a project for KPMG, and it was about sports. We were trying to we were working for a company in Las Vegas, and we were trying to create the sports book that they had at the casinos. We were going to bring that online. And when the developer and I were doing the prototype, we were so clueless about sports teams and names that we were doing crazy things like making up teams, or, you know, we would say that a football team was actually something because we were just putting sort of dummy data in there. And the folks that actually knew anything about sports would get very frustrated when we have things like, you know, the Detroit Rockhoppers, you know, they're like, that doesn't exist. You guys are idiots. So like, I'm also kind of infamous in that I spent an entire semester sitting next to someone who I thought was just a really nice short guy that didn't have a pen very often. And it turns out it was Doug Flutie, because I went to Boston College and he actually won the Heisman Trophy. So he's pretty famous. So I don't know much about sports, but I pick sports. I picked sports for this one, and specifically, it's something called a robo-umpire. And yes. Do you guys play baseball? Do you watch baseball? Are you guys actual sports fans?
Marcos,
I love baseball.
Really?
When once I watch a game, I fall asleep. So now I'm going
to
get a lot of hate, but.
When you
have to
sleep,
no, I think I don't like baseball because I don't really understand it too much. And I'm Italian, so I'm used to a different rhythm in the game. But yeah, I like sports, but not a baseball fan. Not a baseball fan.
Okay.
I'm gonna be honest. So I'm happy to learn, though. I'm open to hear the story.
Sean, sport, baseball.
You know, I enjoy. And yeah, I'll just be honest. I enjoy a game. Mostly for the camaraderie and the people that I'm with. I don't follow any particular baseball team or football team. I do love hockey and follow the Kings and have been to many, 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 many Kings games, LA Kings, of course. Seen Gretzky play and lots of fun stuff. But yeah, generally, even to this day, I don't really follow any sports. I enjoy a game, but mostly because I'm hanging out with friends and having a dog. Or,
like a social event. An opportunity to spend time together.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, that's cool. Yep. But we want to know what's the news.
Yeah, what's the umpire? I was just wondering, because you said umpire, and then you had to clarify baseball. Are there other umpires? I don't know. Is
State Building.
Tennis? What's that?
Empire State Building.
The Empire State Building. No, that's a good question. Are they referees and all other? I don't know. See, this is how limited my sports knowledge is. But yeah,
I wasn't putting you on the spot. It was more of a question for I should know, too. I don't know if tennis has umpires.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or is it a referee?
I don't know. Somebody's yelling at us right now.
I know. They're like madly typing.
Let's talk
comments.
About what
You're
we know.
You're idiots.
Going to technology. Okay. Let's save our face. Let's go with that.
So robo umpire, because human beings, we're not perfect at analyzing things, right? We're good. We're very good, but there umpires very often get called out, you know, that umpire, you're a bum, throw him out. That was a terrible call. You know, the umpire says that person was out or that person was safe. And people in the stands are like, yeah, the ump is blind or whatever. So there's this company in Denmark, a Danish company, that was developing technology to train golfers, but they realized that it could be used to analyze whether or not a ball was in the strike zone. So if it's in the strike zone, so they could say, was that a ball or was the person out? And that would be used as a robo umpire. And when you hear robo umpire, when I first read it, I sort of thought of like this kind of humanoid that would be out on the the baseball field and calling the, you know, making the same, you know, you're safe, you know, that classic, you know, the hands across the body going, you're safe. But no, this actually is just, it's kind of like, a black slab. It's a little bit of sci-fi looking. It's got a big green light that pops, and it's they hang it over an area where it gets a good line of sight, or actually line of or ability to sense, because it's actually a 3D Doppler radar that analyzes the pitches. And it uses this kind of cool technique. In addition to using the 3D Doppler radar, the analysis is smart because it creates this 3D strike zone, but the strike zone is customized to the batter. So if you've got and even to the stance of the batter. So if you've got a really tall batter, their strike zone is going to be different than if you've got a short one. So it analyzes all of that, and then it makes the call. And so when the ball gets pitched, it makes the call, was that in the strike zone or not? And then it gives the call to a human umpire who's got a connection through their smartphone and then an earpiece. And the robo umpire, the recorded voice on the robo umpire says, you know, whether it's safe, or gives the call to the ump. And then the ump actually repeats it to the players and to the folks in the stand so that they know what the call is, which is kind of interesting. I suppose you could just have the robotic voice saying it, but people like to go to, you know, maybe it's just, that's just not, they're doing testing now in different leagues with this. And it may be that just having a robotic voice feels a little bit too distancing. Although the New Yorker article where I found this had an interesting coda to it. The end of it was, first they talked about what the why to have a robo umpire, what a robo umpire is. But the end one was somebody in the stands who was saying like, that's a bad call. You know, can you even see what you're looking at, ump? And then, you know, a man nearby pointed to the device, the robo umpire, and was like, that's the one making the calls. And then the heckler was kind of like, hey, what's going on? It's like, well, can the umpire override the robo umpire, which I'm not sure about, but I just thought it was really interesting taking something, taking this sports issue that people have long complained about. Can the umpire see? Can they make good calls? And trying to create a more objective analysis of whether a ball was in the strike zone or not with the robo umpire.
Interesting, because the first thing that came to my mind is, so we have the technology to help the umpire, but the umpire still takes the heat because people will be people,
yeah,
right? So they're still going to yell at the ump,
yeah,
and use all kinds of names and terms and likely profanities as well. And so, and even before that thought, I was thinking, well, now they're just going to yell at the robot, because before you said it was just some technology that then feeds the information to the person. I pictured like you, a device, whether it looks like a human or not, kind of there, and then making the comment. I still think people would yell at that robot.
It's going to be the people that don't trust science. They're going to be like, screw it.
Yeah. That's the other question is somebody tweaking the tweaking the robots?
You're talking about like when you scream to the referees that he's sold. Because he's making a decision, and now you're saying that somebody hacked. Well, you could have hacked the robot, I guess. So hacked, you go to another different room. You got hacked. You got hacked.
Bribe it.
Strike.
Or bribe.
The catcher interferes. I don't know how it works, but can the catcher interfere with the signals or something? Who knows?
You know, actually, it's interesting because this has been a conversation that's been going on with sport for a very long time, especially for very fast-acting sport. So when you, like soccer, like hockey, for example, and Sean, you ask about tennis, but tennis already had the not only the speed of the ball, but the frame image that show you if the ball is out of bound or not.
Yes.
And usually you just don't even discuss that.
Yeah.
Of course,
well, it goes straight to it
and they review it and that's it. And lately, a few years ago, they brought it even in soccer, finally, where it's always been a no-no because people in Europe, especially in South America, where soccer is big, they used to say, you know what, the referee is part of the game. If you screw up, you screw up. I mean, there's famous game that have been decided even by Diego Armando Maradona, that hit the ball with his hand, but you make it look like it was with his head. They call it the hand of God. It was in a World Cup game. And, you know, that one history, and when people fake to get the penalty. And so in one side, you can say, well, you know, you kind of take the humanity out of the game, and the fact that cheating, you know, cheating is part of the game, acting the fool, behaving in a certain way. And on the other hand, you're like, look, you want to be objective? This was out of bound, and this didn't cross the goal. So it's a tough call, but people love to scream at something watching the game. So you kind of take the fun out of it. But if you consider the amount of money that is involved, and that can make the difference between winning a championship or not, I'm for technology in this. I take the technology stand.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked the idea too of it maybe being a little bit more objective, so that you could take some of the potential for error. I was curious about whether the umpire, though, could, if they really feel that the system was wrong, like how they're going to resolve that. But Sean brings up a point that I hadn't thought of, which is a really important one, which is, are we going to have umpires if all they do is repeat what the machine is telling them and get yelled at by people in the stands?
There's still the buffer between the data.
Yeah.
Speaking of data, another thought I'm having is the metadata. So the ultimate goal with that device is a in or out strike zone or not, and making that call. But presumably could capture much more data. I know in baseball they already capture the speed of the ball, right? But now they could probably track the arc of the ball coming in, the speed of it.
No doubt about it.
And start to use that. And then the crazy thought I had from there was, well, maybe the pitcher gets paid based on how well they pitch. So if in the A leagues, the AA and AAA, I don't know. Again, I'm probably showing my ignorance here on the path leading up to the major leagues. But before they arrive at the major leagues, if there's all that data there to say, this pitcher is consistently in the strike zone for left-handed batters that look to get home runs every time they're at bat. This is the pitcher you want in for this type of team, and therefore they're worth this much money because in our league we have these types of teams that have these types of batters, and you can do all kinds of crazy stuff with that data, right? Maybe they do already.
Like ultra Moneyball it, because Moneyball, that movie, was kind of about using stats to pick people, and yeah, maybe like ultra Moneyballing now with even more info like this.
Well, but they're already doing that game.
A little gambling thing too, right?
Oh, but they're already doing it. It's just, I think with technology, we have more data, and it can make things almost like the game a little bit more predictable. I remember, Sean, two episodes ago, you brought the algorithm that was able to pick the winner in the league.
Yeah.
So do you take the fun out of fun, or out of, you know, the variables that are going to influence something? And they are already doing it. I mean, they're observers, there are datas, and now you're just going to have more and more and more. I mean, you can probably, the other team, while they're studying who's the next team they're going to play, that's the kind of information they want to have. How do usually the guy kick the ball? How does he move left to right? Mm-hmm. And now you have even more data to do that. So at the end of the day, though, who's going to play is the human. I mean, unless we get to the point that also the referee is a robot, the player are robots.
Robot wars.
Yeah.
Well, I saw an ad the other day where it showed this person at a whiteboard with all these calculations, and you could tell he was frazzled in his effort to do the calculations he was doing. And then somebody else walked up and said, "Are you really doing all that minutes before the game starts? Why don't you just use the app and press the button?" and find the answer you're looking for. And it was for, fantasy. I don't know what kind of sport it was, but maybe it's all sports. But anyway, kind of the fantasy picking of the teams where this person presumably was having fun, even if they're pulling their hair out, was doing the calculations, trying to figure out, well, who's going to perform best in this situation based on data that they've collected. Mm-hmm. And somebody, mm-hmm. Marco's point, from my perspective, took the fun out of it.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I was thinking, okay, so if everybody does that, are they all going to get the same answer? So there's no the variety in the betting.
It depends if you're a premium user of the app or you use the free app. Yes. Or, you know, there's the premium.
The premium, like, premium is the better answer, exactly.
99.9% predictability if you pay the VIP and keep guessing if you're using the free app.
Although I guess the nice thing about sports and people is that variability of, you know, our humanity. Somebody just had the sun caught their eye and they didn't catch the ball, or they, you know, had a...
Yeah. You know, you can probably talk the whole episode with this, but it's when you take that, the humanity out, like think about a chess game, right? When you play Kasparov against Big Blue or whatever, it's like this computer, artificial intelligence, if you want to call it that, or just, you know, tunnel intelligence, they can predict gazillion of moves ahead of the game. But when you play two chess players, there is still the human factor. There is still, you can look at a lot of moves ahead, but you're still making that decision that could throw off your opponent. And you wonder, does the computer does that, or is just a dry predictability of this is what is going to happen? And is that a weakness of the computer playing because it may not see something that the human player does? So the reason why I'm saying this is when you try to predict everything, you just take the fun out of it.
I do. I think that too much prediction and too much standardization does take the fun out of it. So,
but in the case of the referee, I'm going to vote for it. I think it's
okay.
You know, it's like the photo finish in Fast Track, right? The 100 meters, the 200 meters, it's always been there for a very, very long time because, you know, you take that picture when you cross the line and that's going to make the decision and there is no questions about it. Formula One cars, I mean, that photo finish has always been there and nobody questioned that. It's like, oh, the photo finish, you have an image. If you don't alter that image, that's the answer. So again, that shows that when you make the decision and make be the difference between winning or losing, I think that's a good thing. Using it for other stuff and maybe not so much fun.
A good mix.
Like you said, Marco, you could talk about this forever because, I mean, if it's that's one decision made from data, not somebody's judgment, that impacts other stuff. And I'm wondering who's benefiting? And I don't want to go down this path necessarily. Maybe we talk about it later, but who's benefiting from that, right? Is it the fans? Is it the teams? Is it the people betting on the games? Is it, I don't know.
You mean from using technology?
Who's getting the return on the investment? Somebody's paying money for that.
You mean from an ethical perspective, or I mean
financially? I mean, who's getting the value of that investment?
The manufacturer of the robotics and the software, I guess. Yeah. But I think in the big picture, you
I don't know.
I think you make it fair. I think it's fair. Why not know for real if that was
good? Save the hell that the umpires get into, but they're still there, so they're still catching the hell. So
yeah, except the umpire's gonna except the referee and the umpire are gonna lose their jobs soon. So
that's right, the robot's taking over.
Yep.
Ah, jeez.
Yeah. Well, you know that could be one of those jobs. Maybe we do a podcast episode about this. Maybe we track down the companies that are doing the robotics. And we have a conversation about that.
Yeah.
Cool. I love it. Yeah. And Diana, you surprised me. You didn't mention dogs or animals once.
I know, it surprised me too.
Welcome to Surprise World, Water World, whatever.
Bird, no dog.
No birds, not hummingbirds, no dogs.
Cool. Snails.
Snails. Oh yeah, you brought the snails too. That was a slow episode, I guess.
That was a slow one.
Oh wow, what a bad joke. Sean, light it up again. I just killed the show.
You did kill it. Everybody's dropping off. I can't even see that today because I'm logged in as a guest. I'm a guest.
You are the guest.
Be our guest. Arriving.
You're the guest.
Which version?
Diana, you want to introduce me? Get today.
Everybody, please welcome Sean Martin.
Yay! Tell us a little bit about yourself. And
if you like my participation today, it's the real me. If you don't like it, it's the AI version.
Oh, that's right,
AI
Sean.
Yeah,
AI Sean.
All right, so like mine's quite lengthy.
Uh-oh.
There's a lot of cool stuff here, and it's driven by a phrase. I caught a documentary, and there's a phrase probably. A lot of people probably heard of it. It's climate positive. Ooh. And so it's not net zero or net neutral, but it's climate positive. So actually helping things to be better than versus just protecting it from us screwing everything up. So I was looking around for some things on that, and I found this Medium post that lists 30 technologies that are all aiming to be climate positive, not just net neutral. And there are a number of different categories, as you can imagine, from a lot around energy, which is interesting. Generation, capturing, storage. One example is affordable solar power delivered in a way that 80% of Americans, sorry for those listening outside of America, but 80% of Americans can actually benefit from this technology, even though they don't have a rooftop to apply this stuff on, an apartment building or high rise or something like that. So that's one example. I'm going to go through a lot of them. Then I want to circle back to get this concept of climate positive. Because there were things like a carbon grid orchestration and integrated data systems to not only understand where energy is coming from and how it's distributed, but also for food growing and delivery all based on climate. Who needs the food? Where should it be grown? How can it be delivered? A lot of data around that. There's technology around more solar and robotics to help position the solar materials in a way that actually capture the most energy. One around reducing methane emissions from, get this, livestock burps.
Oh yeah.
and they're focusing on sheep for whatever reason. Another one, actually a couple around food and creating food, not necessarily growing food, but creating food using fungi super proteins as one example.
Sure.
And another one around air-based protein, which is interesting. And then kind of sticking with, or not, maybe not sticking with the plants, but there was some around plastic and plastics and containers and things like that. So there's some around creating plastics that aren't plastic. They're based on plants. And some that are focused on changing the infrastructure and supply chain around groceries and food delivery so that there's no plastic in that whole process.
Ooh.
And in terms of shipping, I'm sure some folks have received boxes of things. And I know, Marco, many times, a long time ago, I think you were complaining that you received a delivery of one small thing in a giant box, and you're like, mm-hmm. You really need a giant box for that little small thing. And even still, you probably stepped on that box and smashed it and threw it away. It was only used once, and it may get recycled in some way, but there's a cost in recycling. I ate it. You ate the box.
I turned it positive into food. No, I know. I bitch about that all the time. So yeah, you got that right.
Yeah. So there, this particular technology is about packaging that can be used 2,000 times versus one destroyed and maybe recycled in some way. So a whole list, 30 of them. Lots of cool stuff. I looked at a few in depth, not too deep, but it was just the idea that there are companies that are looking to do things that not only save the planet, but actually help be positive in how we look at climate. And there's a quote at the beginning of the post that says the world's richest person, should be somebody mm-hmm. that's fixing or fighting climate change. And that's from Chamath Palihapitiya, I think, if I pronounced that correctly. So the reason I brought all this up, and all 30 happen to be women-owned businesses, which is also really, really cool.
Very cool.
That's very, very cool. So climate positive. And so my question, well, the presentation of all this, and the question to the two of you is, have you seen that term? Has it struck any thoughts from you? Have you seen technologies? I know there's some companies claiming to be climate positive, not just net zero. But I don't know. Is that a term you're familiar with? And your thoughts on it, and some of the technologies I mentioned, perhaps even.
So I had only heard climate positive in terms of the climate pledges that some companies are giving around that, you know, they want to get to. First, they were trying to get to zero emissions, and then they were trying to get better than that and actually go back and retroactively reduce their emissions so much that their use before they got climate friendly, you know, from years before would be offset by being sort of going over and above net zero. So I'd sort of heard it in that context, but I hadn't heard it in the pure, the exact context that you're talking about. But I think it's really exciting. I mean, I really love the idea of let's be climate positive and look towards not even just net zero, but let's get even better than that.
That I heard of it. And I'm a very big fan of it because, first of all, I think it's possible. We are at the point where the technology allow that. Funny enough, I have a list of my name is no idea for those looking at it today because I ended up with three news to pick from. And one, I made a...
It's very
three
mistaken.
Ideas, but no idea which one I'm going to use. That's the point. I'm very confused. But now you lead me to this because there's one that is connected to it. But the idea is, even when you, I remember when I heard about solar panel that you can put in your house, and I know, Diana, you're very passionate about this, and you can produce enough energy, and not only you have it for your own consumption, but then you can sell it back to the electric company, to the grid. Or you can, I don't know, I guess you could donate it in the future. Here's a business idea. Yeah. Just donate it to, you know, a nonprofit or something like that. Well, you know, I want some money if you do that. But that's how nonprofit I am. But the point is, it's feasible. You know, the carbon box, you just gave me this idea, Sean. It's like, as you every day, Jeff, you give me, you know, the stuff that I want, and then the next day you come back because you're delivering some more stuff. Why not just taking back all the box that you just dropped on my porch, and maybe you give me a credit for that, and you reuse those instead of me having to cut it and put it in the trash. So my point is, I think you can do a positive energy or positive waste in everything that you do. It's just we're not in the mindset to do that. But the fact that there is an investment now, and we know that when money is involved, idea become feasible, has said that it is. It's the truth of our society. I'm very excited to know that this is hitting not only documentaries, but the main news, and even more that our women bringing this to the table. And I fully support that for everything. I mean,
I'm a big fan.
The big picture of all of this, I mean, individually, you can look at the technologies and certainly they're aiming on and working toward helping climate and the environment. But the fact that these are collected together, and then some of them are actually in innovations in systems and grids and ecosystems and supply chains that are ultimately going to, I think, work together to tackle this. So why do we need more energy if we're not shipping things as much, or it doesn't cost as much to ship because we're delivering it in a different package or in a different way that doesn't weigh as much, or doesn't require the big box to deliver it in or something. So I think all of these things ultimately play off each other. So if we can change this element and change the way it impacts the environment there, we don't have to create as much energy in this place, which then we don't have to then create new devices and materials that require us to store it in so many places, or delivery system. I mean, I'm rambling a bit here, but the idea is, for me, the collection of these and the infrastructure and the base underneath them that they described, to me, is exciting as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, often, you know, that the old adage of the last unit is cheapest to produce. The more that we get people excited and interested in using these technologies, the more cost efficient it becomes over time, which is great, because a lot of these tech, sometimes there can be people just, oh, we're doing it the old way. But if you think about trying to do something the new way, then you find that it may even be cheaper in the long run. Like for packages, right? There was this big increase recently about so many people are getting packages sent to their house. And I've read some interesting data on whether or not that's good or bad for the environment, because packages get moved around. So whether you drive to the store or the delivery truck comes to you, there have been different analyses on whether or not that, you know, it might actually be better in some cases to have it delivered to you directly. But the packaging inside, you know, I remember when it was all like peanuts or other things that are that old school kind of bubble wrap. And now they have these big air pillows that are made out of soluble corn fiber. It's like, that's just very cool, because we went from something that was clearly pretty wasteful and now to something that, you know, like, I mean, air, that's great, right? It's like you release it back out and then, you know, it's like a resource that nobody had to actually like generate.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's always it's always the convergence of technology that allow one technology to become more efficient and less expensive. And the example of the solar panel, if you look at, you know, in the 50s, when it was really invented, the way to harvest the solar energy was so expensive that you could even think about it. And now we're at a point where we can do that. And I know we have a hard stop at the top of the hour, so I'm going to just quickly connect my news to this one from Sean. And it's related to the what is called DAC, which is direct air capture. And it's pretty much the capturing in the air of the carbon monoxide, the CO2, which is really bad for
the sheep burps.
Yeah, pretty much. That too. So there is this huge, really big facility in Iceland that has been literally just launched, I think, this month, where it allows to pretty much, it doesn't produce anything. It's just a big, big fan that capture air, and it through a chemical process by heating it. And, you know, I'm not going to go in deep into this by reading the article, but pretty much it takes the CO2 out of the air and it solidify it, and then it's pretty much put under the ground where it's going to stay there for a very long time. It's a long article, and it seems like it could be the solution for climate change, but it's not, because this is a really large facility, and it can get as much as 4,000 metric tons of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere each year. So that's the good news. Here's the bad news. Scientists from the University of Berkeley, the Department of Berkeley, they say that even if you want to look at decreasing the temperature rise to 1.5 degrees Celsius by 2100, you need to remove every year 17 gigatons, which is billions of tons of carbon dioxide every year, by the end of the century. So those 4,000 seems a lot, but in the big picture is nothing. So here's the thing. Of course, the main goal is to still don't produce carbon dioxide. But one of the problems that we have right now is that we don't have the technology to stop that unless we change our lifestyle. Until, for example, airplane can fly on electric engine, we can't do that. There are certain industry that need to create carbon dioxide and pollution to give us what we want and to maintain our lifestyle. So the bottom line of the article is that there has to be, a convergence of finding alternatives where we turn positive so that maybe we can compensate even those industries that need to pollute and offset that as well. So a little bit is going to be, green energy. Well, a lot of it is going to be green energy, but when we can't, maybe with the usage of these machines, which are getting cheaper and cheaper, we can remove that extra that it's part of our lifestyle and maybe reach the goal of, stopping the climate change. So long article, maybe we can talk more about it. Mm-hmm. But it connects, Sean, to your story where now we do have the technology to do this. And funny enough, and I'm going to pass the ball to you guys to comment on it, this technology has been existing for a long time, because even on spaceships and submarines, for example, we had this way to take carbon monoxide from the environment. Otherwise, people wouldn't be able to, we breathe that stuff out. So to live in enclosed environment for a long time. So quickly, that's the news. I don't know if we need to add a comment to it, but
you caught me with the space sheeps. I'm not making fun of your the spaceship word there, but I'll quickly go and then pass it to Diana, because the big picture for me and the big question that comes from it is where, and Diana kind of touched on it, is where do these technologies go? Who's going to use them? Is it the consumer? Is it a business? Is it a supply chain, which is again a business? Is it a city, a state, a nation? And then there are big multinational environmental things like the plane, right? Who's going to drive that? And the ultimate question I'm getting to is, will humans accept that change, or will we just push back and say, no, I want to fly and I expect the plane to go a certain speed. I want to get from America to Europe in a certain number of hours in comfort. And that's that. So screw you and your climate positive technology.
Yeah, the screw you is a big possibility, but
so I gotta say, I thought that as an old Muppet Show fan, I thought it was pigs in space that we were mostly into.
Pigs in space is a burp.
I don't know. We'd have to ask Miss Piggy if she's gonna if she burped up there. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that there's got to be some big will and pressure for adoption. And that could be that there's a better experience, which I think that's kind of a nice thing in innovation, is can you make it a better experience in addition to being hopefully a more climate positive experience? And I don't have a Tesla, but a really good friend of mine has a Tesla. And apparently that's an amazing experience to drive a Tesla. So there you've got something that's good for the environment, but also, and I think actually Tesla makes some of their profit by selling their credits to other companies that aren't as climate friendly. Speaking of an interesting like kind of kind of business to be in. But, you know, so does it have to be that the plane experience is going to go slower? It's going to be worse. You know, I like the idea of innovation, trying to push it better. So we're going to have a better experience, but failing the better experience, which would be primary, then maybe we need to have people either collectively decide reducing climate disasters that are going on is so important, or perhaps, you know, internationally governments get together and say, folks, if your collective will isn't there, we're going to help you along with collective will by saying this is something that for the better of all of us, we're going to start putting in regulation. That's probably a really big long shot. And I'm sure some people are hearing that and going like, oh, no. But something, there's got to be some driver for adoption, you know?
You know what is the driver? And I'm going to close with this, is that you kind of need both. It's kind of like sucking the CO2 from the environment. Yeah, you need that and you need to cut the emission of it quite a bit. And for the humans, it's, again, I go back to if everybody was going to do a little bit about the environment, and this was the thing about, you know, recycling, you know, if all we recycle a little bit, we're going to make a big dent in this. And it's so true. But you know what we need? We need to make it cool. Tesla made it cool. Right. I don't know what is, if there's positive or negative or equal, but it made cool to have an electric car. So maybe it's cool to have a little fan that recycle carbon monoxide next to your solar panel on the home. Maybe it's cool to do something good for the environment.
Yep.
And maybe we, I don't know, maybe not little, we give some ideas and people can start to do something tomorrow, even in they're all little mean. That doesn't have to be big, right?
That's right.
All righty then. I feel
we
good
all
today.
Just start capturing our own sheep's burps.
All right.
This space, the space sheeps. That's space what sheeps. It is.
Space use.
Space use.
It's the animal farm of sci-fi. We're gonna put animal in space.
Diana can rest easy. We brought it back to animals.
Thank you.
We
Thank
went
you.
All the way around. So, and we can start thinking about Halloween episode and try to find a way to involve animals in that. And because we got on time for probably the first time in 16 episodes, let's call it off. Let's say a proper goodbye to everyone. And catch you next week. Peace out.
Same channel, same time. With or without costumes, who knows?
With or without guests.
And with guests. Without we'll have a guest. You just won't know if we do.
We'll see. Just tune in. You'll know. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Peace out.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itspmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Thank you.